Hello and welcome to Life Matters. I'm Kate Evans. Now, here's a provocative idea. Is being bad at maths a badge of honour in our society? Does the very mention of the word maths make you want to run the other way? Does it make you feel a bit queasy? Well, it does for many people. Just put the phrase maths anxiety into Google and see what happens. Today on Life Matters, we want to hear about your experiences with maths. Do you think maths divides us? It seems you either get it or you don't. Which camp are you in? So call our Life Matters talkback number, 1300 225 576. That's 1300-CALL-RN. And South Australian listeners should call immediately to beat the time differences. And I'm afraid that listeners in Queensland, Western Australia and the Northern Territory will have to write, email or call our listener line on 02 833 1430. But I'd like now to introduce our very numerate guests who would like maths to stop being a dirty word that divides us, that doesn't divide the do's from the can'ts. And we have with us Dr. Mark Drass, computing lecturer at Macquarie University in Sydney. Hi, Mark.
Morning.
Bob Anderson from the Mathematical and Information Sciences at the CSIRO in Canberra. Good morning, Bob. And Carolyn Kennett, director of the Numeracy Centre at Macquarie University. Hi, Carolyn.
Hi, Kate.
Carolyn, you deal with maths anxiety. What are the symptoms?
Well, it's varied, but people get into a panic when they're asked to do anything mathematical. They get they freeze up, they get frightened and very, very nervous, and it comes out as a real fear. You know, so when they're asked to do anything mathematical, they would rather run the other way.
And is it as extreme as being a phobia?
Yes, there are documented cases in the journals about maths anxious people, and it's clear that it's an absolute phobia for a lot of people. And we see a broad range of students, ranging from just a mild fear to the over the top anxious people that really just don't function very well at all.
And does it seem to be related to bad experiences at school?
I think partly, yes. I think that success at mathematics is one of the things that will help reduce maths anxiety, and that it's a history of non-success and being slow that often brings it about. And of course we've got stories about people being told, oh, it doesn't matter, you don't need to be able to do mathematics, and that just reinforces that kind of negative idea about some people just can't do it, and so therefore they think, well, that's okay, I'm just one of those people who can't do it, and so they just and they never overcome the fear because nobody's there to give them a positive learning experience.
Well, we're keen to unpack all of those issues today during our Life Matters talkback. And if you have a bad memory of maths at school, or indeed a very positive one, or if you can recall the point where maths stopped making sense, call us on 1300 225 576, which is also 1300-CALL-RN. Bob Anderson, why does maths in particular provoke such a strong negative reaction, do you think?
Oh, I think it's a very challenging subject for students because of the way it's taught at school, that one has to always be correct with mathematics. And I don't think it's emphasised at school that what they're doing is they're learning a set of tools and a set of knowledge, and they need that knowledge before they can have an opportunity to apply it to problems. They need the knowledge before they can have the training to do problem solving. And the training of the knowledge, as I've already said, is that they must get everything correct. But whereas in problem solving, you've got to make a guess in order to get going.
So I guess that's partly about the ideas behind mathematical thinking. But Carolyn, if we just pause again on the question of fear, does fear of maths lead to an inability to do maths?
I'm not actually sure whether inability is the right word, except in the case of, you know, I can't do it, I can't do it, I can't do it. They've found in studies that if they treat the anxiety, students don't need to be taught any more mathematics. They
I guess already that's know what it. I was wondering, whether it's a self-fulfilling prophecy that telling yourself that you can't do it means that you can't do it.
I think that's true for many, many students. Mm.
So anxiety having an impact rather than any sort of intellectual ability.
Absolutely.
So Mark Drass, do most, and I guess this could be provocative, particularly to any mathematicians and perhaps economists out there, Do most of us really need maths beyond basic numeracy? Convince me. Can't we outsource our algorithms?
Right. So I guess there are two grounds you could argue that maths is necessary. One is the practical grounds, it's a useful thing for a whole lot of people when they go and work. So there's a study, TIMSS, which will probably get mentioned several times during the show, Trends in International Maths and Science. And they had a look previously at where mathematics was useful. And they'd found that TIMSS is a US study, but it's of a whole lot of countries. They found that half of all the fastest growing companies in the US were high tech ones. And a quarter of all of the entry-level positions there needed to be quite numerate in mathematics, the people who took them.
Well, let's pause on that, because I guess one of the things that's interested me about looking at this area is just how broad a spectrum of working lives and daily lives use maths as an application, because mm-hmm. it's not just about high tech, is it? I mean, everything from piano tuners, I believe, to people who work in industry and agriculture, or people who cover sport. Chefs, they use it as well. So, but at what level do you require numeracy to get by in everyday life?
All right. So, a thing that I suppose I've noticed is, well, if you think about things like trying to work out which is the best mobile phone plan or the best bank account or things like that, I mean, they're actually quite detailed, although maybe these specific mathematical techniques aren't especially sophisticated. But sort of the other grounds for doing maths are that it's good for your brain. In teaching...
So is literature.
It's true. But the way in which it's different... So as part of teaching, I've had a look at what people have said throughout the ages, and one that I particularly liked. I read Plato's Republic as part of that. And so Plato is very much in favour of saying mathematics is good in an end of itself, with no purpose at all. It's the specific characteristics of mathematics make your brain active. And if you have a look at, when I was thinking about the topic, I went and had a look at the Alzheimer's website. I was thinking, so where would it be useful just to have an active kind of brain? And on the Alzheimer's website, they talk about things like doing crosswords, doing Sudoku. Mathematics is exactly that kind of thing. It's not quite the same as literature, which I think is an extremely useful and interesting thing to do, and I love it. The specific kind of concentration that you need for mathematics, it's a bit like when you learn a language or when you play music. They're the sort of things that you have to practice and practice and practice. And it's that you can't just sort of dip into it. And it's that kind of ongoing practice that keeps your brain alive, which is maybe different. I mean, you could just dip into literature, although you get a lot more out of it if you do have that kind of concentration.
On Life Matters this morning, we're talking about maths, numeracy, and fear and anxiety as well. And we're very interested in hearing at what point your attitude to maths changed, whether it was for the better or the worst. And Mary has phoned from Maroubra, and she is a bit anxious about maths. Good morning, Mary.
Good morning. My problem started when I first started school. I would have been probably five, and I started midway through a year and saw these numbers on a board. And listening to the other children, they could do it, and I'm thinking, I should be able to do this. So consequently, over the years, particularly in the maths classroom, I would see the numbers and just freeze. So I had a couple of teachers that would actually pull me out in front of the classroom, put the problem on the blackboard, and then I would stand there. So you can imagine 30-odd students looking at you in the classroom. And I knew full well I couldn't complete the problem. I couldn't even start the problem. And the perspiration would just come down the side of my face, under my arms, and I'd feel thoroughly ridiculous. Then, as I got older, even through high school, I'd get chronic migraines leading up to a class, and I'd just go and vomit. So that was my experience with mathematics. Having said that, I would dearly have loved to know how to do it. I probably just needed somebody who would take me back and explain the very fundamental principles. Because later on, when my son was going to school, I'd hear problems, or he'd be reciting problems. And I think, oh, that's the... And I'd come up with an answer, and my husband would say, how did you arrive at that? And I'd say, well, it seems logical. So I was logically able to do things, but I didn't know how I arrived at the answer.
Oh, look, Mary, thank you so much for that. And Carolyn, you were wincing in support and anxiety, the idea that you'd have to stand up in front of a blackboard and be humiliated. So how do you respond to that as an experience?
Oh, I think, Mary, unfortunately, you're not alone. Lots and lots of people have had that kind of horrible experience from teachers being really, you know, it's awful. It's just terrible, and I feel so sorry for you. And I just, one of the things that I have to tell my students time and time again, I have one group of particularly maths anxious students, is that what you must do is just completely divorce the idea that whether you can do maths or not has anything to do with your worth as a person. And I tell them that over and over again, and they end up crying because they've felt like you've felt from a very young age. And I just, you know, I think it's good that you still are willing to listen to what your child's doing, and you haven't passed that fear on. And I would just encourage you to realise that one of the reasons that people have problems solving complicated problems mathematically is actually because the anxiety is using up quite a large part of their brain function. And so the whole time that you're nervous, you haven't got quite as much brain to use to solve problems.
Well, just in case we seem to be tarring all maths teachers with the same brush, Tracy from Melbourne has called, who had some positive experiences with maths as a child. Good morning, Tracy.
Good morning.
So you weren't humiliated in front of a blackboard?
No, my sister taught me maths before I started school, and by the time I was 7, I knew my multiplication, so I really stood, I was ahead of everyone, and it just, everyone relies upon me at work, and I got an economics degree, and, you know, it just, you know, transcended my life.
So for you, it's about pleasure.
Yeah, and I'm sort of logical, I guess. Learning from a young age, I became very logical.
Thank you so much for calling, Tracy. And Mark, I could see you sort of smiling in support there. Would I presume that as a child you also saw the pleasure in mathematics?
Yeah, I did. Sometimes it's hard to identify where it all came from, but I do remember with my mum having adding up competitions. So we'd race each other to see who could add up a column of numbers, which is kind of nerdy, but I think it helped shape the fact that I really enjoyed mathematics at school. So I knew about it before I went as well.
Bob Anderson, what were you like as a child? Did you get that pleasure of mathematics early on?
Yes, I got the pleasure of mathematics early on, but it was more in a geometric sense and an algebraic sense. We were told in primary school that we would have great difficulty in studying algebra when we got to intermediate school. And I know, in a sense, I was a little bit terrified, but the big surprise for me, when they put up algebra on the board, I could immediately see its relevance. And so for me, there was this enjoyment. But I'd now like to make a point. At school, in many senses, the people who could add up fast and multiply fast were the people who were said to be excellent at mathematics. But there's a sense in which some of those students are going to be excellent. But I think it's an important thing to mention that being good at arithmetic doesn't mean to say that you're going to be good at mathematics, because mathematics, the deeper aspects, is finding patterns.
Well, that's an important point, isn't it? I mean, we're talking about maths, but as a conceptual and intellectual area, which is what you three are engaged with, it can be quite different from what people think we're talking about, which is whether you can quickly add up your shopping list as you're going around. Let's hear from Rosemary in the Blue Mountains, who's has not had a happy experience with maths. Good morning, Rosemary.
Good morning.
How do you respond when you do have to quickly add up a list of numbers?
Well, I just go to pieces. Especially when there are people there. My experience was very similar to Mary from Maroubra. I found when I was a child, which is a while ago now, my parents thought that it didn't matter for women. And when I was at school, I remember the nuns coming along and rapping me over the knuckles and saying, "Get that I'm playing Beethoven look off your face," when I was in maths classes. And I really applaud what you're doing, and it's so nice to hear that other people have the same problem, because it's really interfered with my career and my ability to... I'm sure I could have gone a lot further with my work if I hadn't had that terrible fear all the time of getting it wrong.
How did it hold you back career-wise?
Well, I was in marketing, And you have to be able to forecast, and you have to be able to work out quickly in your head, you know, things like markups and margins and how to cost products. And I always had to be very, very nice to the accountants.
Well, Rosemary, you're doing all the hard work for us as well. You've also raised two other very important issues for us. One was gender, and the other is the presumption that you've got that Beethoven look on your face, the presumption that maths and the arts are somehow incompatible, that one's more intellectually demanding than the other. So, Rosemary, thanks so much for calling us.
Thank you. Bye.
Mark, as somebody who teaches students maths, do you notice that gender divide? Do you have more women being resistant to maths?
In general, we have a much smaller number of women as they teach computing subjects which require maths as a prerequisite. So we definitely have a lot fewer women. But of the ones that we have, I wouldn't say that they were any different from the men. But I guess they're a self-selected group in the first place.
Yes. Well, I have a sister who did engineering and was the only woman in her entire year at Wollongong University.
Uh-huh. I can believe it.
Yes. And what about this supposed rift between mathematics and the arts, maths and creativity, that people get shunted into one or the other? Carolyn, is that something that you encounter as well? I'm a creative, artistic person, so I can't do maths?
That's what people say. And I mean, obviously, for those of us who are involved in mathematics, we would say that that's just not true. There is a distinction, of course, that Bob was making between arithmetic and mathematics. But mathematics, as we would view mathematics, is a creative field. You know, there's sayings about poets and mathematicians.
And music and maths as
well. And music and maths and languages and maths, they all go hand in hand because part of the brain that we use to do mathematics is the creative part that also does all those things as well. So what we would refer to as mathematics is actually a creative thing. But you do hear students say, oh, no, I'm an artsy person and, you know, maths is not my thing.
And Carolyn, is there a gender difference in the people who come to you for help?
Yes. I mean, I do see a lot more women. I'm not sure whether that's partly actually, again, a self-selection in the fact that sometimes blokes don't want to admit quite as readily that they're no good at it. But, yeah, I do see a lot of women, and in particular older women who have come back to university for study purposes that sort of have had their families and they're in their 40s and they're really frightened.
Let's hear now from Tony in Tasmania. And, Tony, you're a teacher?
I'm a relief teacher, yeah. So this time of year I'm not usually that busy. But I was an accountant at first, so, you know, sort of figures going in your head all the time. And then I sort of, you know, I went over to teaching. I had to do a 2-year course, and most of them were postgraduate. Most of them had graduated in the arts area, in philosophies and that kind of thing. What I also find, you know, once I go through the schools, is that a lot of primary school teachers, as you say, their arithmetic is good, but their maths is fairly poor. And so they advert to the old, you know, sort of rote learn the old times tables rather than sort of trying to make, as we do with literacy now, trying to make it a bit more interesting. I mean, we've gone away with the old John and Betty books. We try and make reading, sort of a fun thing, but we don't try and make maths a fun thing.
Tony, thank you very much for that, and we'll be getting on to the way in which we teach maths very soon, I think. And Mandy from Brooklyn, what impact did your teacher have on you?
Hi. Well, I had a terrible time at high school. I did fine in primary and did well in every other subject. I had a teacher that didn't have English as his first language, and I could not understand him, and I had him for 3 years, and I tried to explain that to the maths head teacher, who was a very cruel man and just punished me, having to write out timetables many times. And I tried to explain it to my parents, who were too busy with their careers, and I failed the HSC, and then I had to do maths at uni because I like science. And I also regret that I wasn't able to do physics because it needed that maths behind it, and I still regret today. And so I struggled and struggled and just got a pass, thank goodness, in maths. No idea how I did it. And I've gone on for a postgraduate degree. I'm a dietitian now, and we do a lot of research, and I still find it a terrible barrier. And I'd like to do further education, but I know whatever I do, I'm going to hit all this mathematical stuff. So, and the, to top it off, my daughter has just started first form, or was year seven this year, and she had her maths teacher was from another country as well, and she couldn't understand him. So, you know, I was up there like a flash, and I'm monitoring it. But, yeah, I've had a horrendous time. I can't do my BAS. I have my own business. If I had to do my BAS, I'd close my business and work for someone else. I just, you know, I mean, I'm shaking now with the thought of the whole thing.
Oh, I'm so sorry to hear that you're shaking. Bob Anderson, of course, having to do things like BAS statements, again, a very day-to-day application for an awful lot of people. How do you respond to hearing stories like Mandy's?
Well, I feel very disappointed that the background for people like herself, like Mandy, has been such that she feels this way. But the way I try to help people in that situation is point out to them that at a certain level they're doing mathematics subconsciously. If they're planning their garden or they're buying something at the shop, or some activity like that, they're using mathematical skills and fundamental mathematical skills of comparison, etc., and forming patterns and ideas. And they're going back to those areas that Caroline has mentioned in the brain that are related to creativity. And I'd like to take up Caroline's very good point about creativity. In a sense, mathematics and creativity are very, very close, because if you think of what you hear about famous poets or musicians, they have to make a first guess and then they have to refine that guess. And that's actually what mathematics is about, but that's not how it is taught at school, because at school, you first of all, as I made that point earlier on, you have to learn the knowledge. And in learning the knowledge, that fact that you, when you come to do mathematics, which is different from learning it, you make a guess and you refine the guess.
1-300-225576 is our number here on Life Matters, where we're talking about the very complex area of maths. We're talking about mathematics, not just arithmetic, but we're very keen to hear your experiences of it, what impact it's had on your life and career, your relationship to maths. But Mark Drass, how is Australia performing in maths? Is there any real cause for concern about our performance?
There definitely seems to be a very animated debate in the media about it. So there are two fairly large, very large-scale studies. One's called PISA. It's run by the Organisation for Economic Cooperation and Development. And the other one's called TIMSS, and that's run by, in the US, National Centre for Education Statistics. Neither of them are particularly concerning. Maybe a little bit, but broadly, in the PISA comparison, Australian students do really well. In the TIMSS ones, it's a little bit more mixed than that.
But when you look at the different reports together, it seems that Australia is doing just above average in maths. So, Bob Anderson, if that's the case and that's how we're doing worldwide, should we really be too concerned?
No, we shouldn't be concerned. I think that's important. We should look at the things in a neutral and dispassionate manner. The fact that we're doing well from the point of view of students learning knowledge is very pleasing. But we should remember the point that I'm making, that mathematics, in a sense, from the point of view of the community, is two things: learning the knowledge, applying the knowledge. And in a sense, a lot of what we're hearing about people's concern is that they've got the knowledge, maybe sometimes under adverse circumstances, but they've got the knowledge. The challenge for them is applying the knowledge. And in a sense, that's the thing that I think is lacking in the teaching of mathematics quite broadly, because of that dichotomy that I've said. There's two roles: mathematical knowledge and then applying the knowledge.
So not,
oh, sorry, Mark, you're keen to leap in there?
Yeah, so the at least from my understanding of the two tests, the sort of things that PISA measures is application to problems. TIMSS is more specifically about the content. And Australians actually do quite well at, so this is end of high school students, they do quite well at applying knowledge, which is a promising thing.
Well, let's talk a bit more about the application of that knowledge. Bob Anderson, you're with the Mathematical and Information Services at CSIRO. So tell me more about the role of your mathematical skill in the CSIRO? Who needs maths, I guess, is the underlying question there. No, please go on.
Okay, the answer is everybody, including myself and my colleagues. And I think rather than talk about myself, I should talk about what my colleagues do in CSIRO. And to do that, let's understand the dichotomy that faces mathematics. If somebody has a problem or a question and it leads to a mathematical question or problem, then we're asked to solve it, and then we might have to do a huge amount of work, a lot of technical detail to get an answer. But the moment we get an answer, the person who raised the question only wants to know what the interpretation of that answer is for their application. Then immediately they can go on with their science or their economics. And they don't need to know the technical details that got to that answer. So there's the dichotomy. But in a certain sense, it's the reason why mathematics is so important to organisations like CSIRO. CSIRO does the quality work it does because it fosters a very strong collaboration between scientists, mathematicians and statisticians. Because in a sense, you solve a dichotomy by balancing off the two sides, as I've explained a moment ago.
Thank you very much for that, Bob. And Sandra from Sydney has called, who has studied higher maths. Did you enjoy it, Sandra?
I did. I enjoyed the principle of it, but it was, as your people are saying, and I've been taking notes, it's the basic knowledge as you're learning it and applying the maths in class goes, I believe, into the subconscious part of your brain, but it is the application, because when you're faced with a situation of having to do a job, for example, in maths, the fear rises. I studied higher maths in high school, but then in the last couple of years went down to lower maths. The teacher told me I was useless and I'd never be able to do it. But then during my life when I was married with my ex-husband, we ran a business where I had to use maths with the bookkeeping and with the computer, and so ran that fine, and that changed my opinion of myself. And then in later years I now work in an industry where I have to use a lot of maths and a lot of formulae, and I had to study it, go back to TAFE and study it there, and I was very fearful and felt very stupid when I was in class with younger people who could use the financial calculators and scientific calculators with ease. And it would take me so much longer to understand it and then be able to apply it, but that you never had time in the course to be able for the teacher to spend time with you going over the principle, because you had to move on. So now that when I'm doing this work that I have to do with the different principles and scientific, well, not scientific, the calculations, I'll have a block in front of me thinking, I know that, I can't do it. How can I get these problems solved? And then once I've left it for a while, I go back and I think, oh, maybe that's how I do it. But then when you're qualified you have a qualification, you're expected to be able to go out and do the work, there is this great fear of not being capable and of being less than capable. And to whom do you turn?
Well, to whom do you turn, Carolyn? Might you turn to somebody?
I do turn to other people in the industry, but that still doesn't take away, and you do get help that way, and I do refer back to my class notes. But it's just the application and this fear of feeling completely incapable. And you know that you should be able to do it, and if there was just someone who could take the time to show you around that particular problem again, and then you'd be fine.
Well, Sandra, it actually sounds to me like you're working very hard at making it all work. So thank you for calling. And Colin from Canberra, as an engineer, you use apply maths all the time.
Well, I don't anymore because I've moved away from engineering. But the point I was trying to make was that there's a certain mindset that can work with mathematics, and there's a mindset that doesn't. I mean, all the time I was doing my engineering, I had to, and I wanted to get to, you know, understand simple things like quadratic equations, calculus, and it used to frustrate me that I couldn't see where it could be used. I just couldn't see the trends. I couldn't sort of ask the clever questions. But when I did a later degree, it was a humanities degree in political science and development studies, the patterns and the trends in sort of society's changing, and look, they were, you know, they were common sense. I could follow them, and I could ask the questions, you know, for doing the research, which I could never, ever do. I mean, I watched an SBS program on Einstein, and the questions he was asking to come up with, you know, this time, space warping, and the, I mean, to explain gravity, I mean, I couldn't even understand the question, let alone really understand the answers to it. And I'd say, and this is from somebody who really wanted, was interested and wanted to be able to use the mathematics, and it ended up, it was just a simple tool. I had to remember that if I was going to do this particular calculation, these were the formulae, this is the process I had to follow. And I used to have to write it down. I could never sort of just claw it out of my memory or bring it. It was never logical in a sense, which seems silly when you're talking about mathematics.
Colin, thank you so much for calling, and I can see that Mark Drass, who's a computing lecturer at Macquarie University, is keen to respond to that one, I think.
Yeah, so I think the aim isn't for us all to be Einsteins or be able to understand exactly what it is that the sort of questions that he's asking. So in my opinion, it's good to just have a varying levels of competence with mathematics. You don't have to be brilliant, but you just have to be comfortable with it. So the equivalent for me, for all the callers that we've had, so Mary, for example, who had said they had a really terrible time at school, for me, it was with sport. I hated it. My sports teacher was not the world's nicest person. I'd be forced to go and do push-ups all the time because I wouldn't do something particularly competently. And so at school, I completely hated sport. It was only when I got to university that I independently discovered squash and badminton and cycling. They were things that I hadn't done at school, which is probably why I actually liked them. I wasn't very good at them at the beginning either, but I was kind of motivated. There's someone I had a crush on who I wanted to impress with playing squash. So I got better at them, and after several years, I discovered that I was actually kind of okay. So I'm never going to be, play for Australia in any sport at all. It actually made me happy when I managed to get a grasp of them. It's good for me generally in terms of general health and fitness. It's occasionally satisfying. I'm playing a colleague at squash this evening, and hopefully we'll beat him. So I still get excited about that. But I'm not going to be a sporting equivalent of Einstein. But just having that basic level and being happy with it now, I think is important. And so, I mean, for me, maths is a lot like exercise. It's the mental equivalent.
The other interesting thing there, I think, is that Colin made it clear that he felt it was something inherent, that he just inherently could not do it and could not get it. And perhaps when you were at school, Mark, you felt that you weren't a kid who could do sport.
Absolutely. Never be able to catch.
So, Carolyn, how much is that what the behavioural psychologists call the self-talk stuff? How important is that in people's ability, that sort of myth of, well, or is it a myth, that I'm just somebody who can't do maths, I'll never be able to do it?
Well, I do think it's a myth at a level of competency that Mark's talking about, that, you know, everybody is capable of learning at some level to a competent level in mathematics, but it is affected quite strongly by people's opinions, and there is clearly a whole group of people out there who think that it is really, you're either in the camp that can or you're in the camp that can't, and I don't believe that. I just think that you need to be moved from the can't camp to the can camp by positive reinforcement and positive, positive experiences in learning mathematics. We're not all going to be Einsteins. But one of the things that I thought about when Colin was talking was learning styles. He was talking about how he got politics. He didn't see the overall pattern in mathematics. And I think sometimes what happens is that we have different learning styles, and maths is taught in a particular way, and it's always taught in that way. We don't very often vary the way that we teach mathematics. And yet there are clearly different learning styles that students have, and some need to see the global picture before they get to the nitty-gritty, and others like the step-by-step process, and then they see the global picture at the end. And if you're in one camp or the other, that will affect the way that you respond to material that's being taught.
Well, Luke has called from Sydney, who has a bit of a critique of the way in which maths is taught, I think, and argues that it needs a more social bearing. Good morning, Luke.
Yeah, good morning. Very interesting conversation, but I just feel that the whole idea of maths has to be socialised a lot more and relating to people and the environment, especially just the generalisations here, like the idea that you're creative, you can't really be a mathematician, that's pretty bad. There's a lot of really creative mathematicians that I know. The idea that you're either creative or you're not, and you're a mathematician or not, this is just a widespread of so many different types of people. What I find a problem is that a lot of the scientists and a lot of the people, like in the news today, you've got a plan for a desalination plant in Port Augusta, you know, with the Olympic Dam over there. There's a major plan that's been put down by scientists and engineers that seems to avoid totally the need for the people in the area. They need water, and they're saying that the Olympic Dam uranium mine is going to increase its use of water up to 120 or nearly 200 million litres a day, which means the social consequence and the environmental consequence of these engineering and mathematical ideas hasn't really hit home to the people that are organising it. It seems to be a long way away from the needs of the people and the society in the area.
Bob Anderson, the sort of social and political implications of your mathematical analysis, how would you respond to that?
Oh, they're very important, but it comes back to the points that I made earlier. The mathematician solves the problem. The people who take the solution are the people who raise the problem in the first place. And so in many senses, and this is indirectly what Luke is saying, is that the problem solvers in real applications are the people who need to justify the social implications of how they interpret the results from mathematics. But both Colin and Luke are raising a very important point, which I think is best summarised because it has been understood by mathematicians for many years. Jeffries and Jeffries, in the preface to their book Methods of Mathematical Physics, makes the following very, very perceptive comment about students in Cambridge. "We think that many students have difficulty in following abstract arguments, not on account of incapacity, but because they need to see the point before their interest can be aroused." If you think of that quotation, that explains a lot of the comments we've heard, not only from Colin and Luke, but other people so far, is that in a certain sense, the environment in which they're learning mathematics doesn't stimulate, doesn't give them motivation that stimulates their interest to make that additional effort in the sporting analogy that Mark so nicely brought up.
Well, thank you so much for that, Bob. And that was Bob Anderson from the Mathematical and Information Services at CSIRO. That's a good segue for us to talk about maths teaching and stimulation and so on. But let's hear from two students first who really aren't too keen on maths.
My name's Sally. I just finished the HSC doing all humanities subjects, no maths or science. I stopped maths in year 10 because I wasn't doing well at it. That was the main reason. It was a big crush to the self-esteem. I guess I had to put in a lot of effort to do well in it.
I'm Will. I'm currently just finished year 10. I'm Sal's brother. Next year I'm going on to do 2-unit maths, but not really out of choice. I originally didn't plan to do any maths, but the university course that I wanted to get into required at least general maths. And I was told that if I was going to do maths, that there wasn't any point in just doing general maths, but based on my ability, I should do at least 2 units. I'm very reluctant to do maths because I'm not particularly bad at it. I have a reasonable ability in it. But I just don't really find it interesting. I don't really get along with it.
I really didn't like the fact that teachers would give us formulas and tell us to substitute numbers into formulas without telling us why the formulas were the way they were and what it all meant. It didn't leave room for me to really be stimulated, I felt. It wasn't that it was easy. It wasn't easy in any way. But it didn't allow me to think outside the box. Not the fact that it was maths, but the way that it was taught. Whereas other subjects like English allowed for in-depth dynamic class discussions, which I really enjoyed. So that's really the main reason I dropped maths in year 10. Having said that, one time that I really was stimulated by maths was when I went with my family overseas to the Netherlands for half a year, and I went to an international school there where I found the way of learning very different to how it is in Australia. In maths class, we were actually discussing what it is that we were learning.
Yeah, I think it's very much related to the culture of the place where you are. I think in Australia we have a very lazy and laid-back culture, and maths definitely Oh, I find it a much harder subject. It takes a lot more learning and practice, whereas English is just, it's pretty much life skills, and you don't really need to sit there for hours every night studying formulas or set patterns to be able to figure it out.
Mark Dress, Sally and Will hinted that they might be shying away from maths because they thought it required too much work. Is that your experience of teaching people maths?
Yes, pretty much. I said to one of my colleagues, maybe slightly bluntly, people don't do maths because maths is hard and people are lazy.
I think that's a bit unfair, actually. As somebody who has pursued humanities up to a postgraduate degree, I have to confess I avoided maths because I found it conceptually and analytically it wasn't as challenging. Mm-hmm. So for me, I did a PhD in history instead. So how do you respond to that?
Yep. So as I'd said before, as a bit of context. So I've also done some literature at university just for fun because I really like it as well. And initially the lecturer on the unit did find it quite weird. We sort of went around the room and everyone was like, "Hi, I'm doing arts law. Hi, I'm doing arts law." Like, "Hi, I'm doing computer science." So there was already a bit of a divide there. And it was definitely the case that I found it useful to have an analytical approach to the topic, and it seemed to work well. The lecturer thought that it was good. So there's definitely a kind of logical analysis that was also very appropriate in literature. But there's a different kind of focus that you need in mathematics. And so as I think it was Will was saying, that you do have to do lots and lots of sort of repetitive focus things, exercises.
Rote learning, boring. Turn off, not going to do it. Who cares? Got my calculator. Somebody else can do my tax. Why should I bother?
Yes, well, it's Bob. I mean, that's one of the big difficulties that we have is that it's when the mathematics is taught at school, it's not taught within a bigger framework of why that knowledge is being learned. And it is challenging to learn that knowledge. But if one turns to the nice quotation of John Rennie that applies more generally but also to mathematics, is in a crisis you don't rise to the occasion, you sink to the level of your training. So if you want to be a good problem solver, you need a big pool of knowledge. Problem solving is like fishing. If you go out fishing, you don't fish in a tiny pond, you fish in a big pond. So if you want to be a good problem solver, you need a big pool of mathematical knowledge along with other knowledge.
Thank you, and that was an absolutely lovely quote. And Damien from Canberra has called. You're a maths teacher.
No, I was saying my son has been just finished year 10 maths, and we've been having some of these debates related in parts. We had the same maths teacher as well.
Right, and so how do you feel about maths? Do you enjoy it? I mean, what I'm finding about this discussion is I've got three people here who are making me feel a bit more excited about maths than I ever have.
Well, my son has been quite challenging for me in that I came from a paradigm of education that said if you don't do three-unit maths, at least physics and chemistry, then you're not really getting an education, and that's not my son's thing at all. He wants to do a double major English, and I failed English. But it's been a bit of a struggle coming to, an understanding between us about the role of maths, because he's made exactly these points that, what use is maths going to be in his later life, and particularly some of the abstruse kinds of mathematics he's learning even in year 10, which I certainly don't use now myself. I suppose some of my thoughts on it are, firstly, I heard earlier the suggestion that maybe people don't need to be taught maths. I think there's an awful lot of life experiences and professions which need some level of numeracy, and I think education's about opening opportunities, not just learning vocational skills. And to the extent that people don't learn mathematics, then that's opportunities lost. I think also, we live in a world of numbers, and while not everyone has to do the top level maths, I think it's unfortunate if people don't have a basic level of numeracy and an understanding of how to handle numbers, because after about fifth grade, maths is not just about applying the formulas, it's about picking out the tools. It's not just cranking the handle to get an answer, it's about almost an art, if you like. So there's this, I have this idea of mathematics and numeracy as being a set of competencies in being able to, I suppose, work with numbers. And going back to the tax point, that was made earlier. I mean, sure, someone else can do your tax, but you still have to sign off on it yourself. You still have to do things like decide what's the best phone deal or loan deal or whatever for you.
Thank you so much, Damien. And Mari from Wagga has called, and I think you might... do you enjoy the art of algebra and geometry?
Yes.
Can you see the poetry in it?
Hello. I was just pleased to hear that thing about the art of maths, because I think there's a lot of crossover between literature and mathematics. So it's been interesting to have that double thread conversation. And I was just trying to find on my bookshelf Leaning Towards Infinity, which it combines both, if you're familiar with that book. What I was wanting to say was, like a whole lot of the people who called earlier, had a whole mixed bag of experiences with maths over a fairly long life. And I always remember my last year of primary school when I used to get the strap every morning, because I used to have the strap in those days.
Why were you given the strap? Was it because of maths?
Because of maths, yeah. I would have maths homework to take home, and I would sit and stare at the page and know that this was not going to happen, and that I was going to get the strap the next morning, and then I'd take it home and I'd look at the page and I was going to get the strap in the morning. So that was something that I didn't appreciate. But in the very next year, I was in an intensive year of preparing for a scholarship and discovered algebra and geometry.
And so you enjoyed it. You got the pleasure of both of those.
Absolutely, yeah. And I've come over the years to appreciate the what I used to call arithmetic side of things, but there was no art to it. It was all, as people have been saying, formulas, and I'd look at the formulas and the next day they were totally new to me. It just doesn't stick.
Thank you so much for calling, Mari. And Mike from Sydney, it all comes down to teaching for you.
Oh, hi. Look, I agree with Mari. I've got an uneasy truce with mathematics, and I think it has a great deal to do with the way I was taught. And I especially wanted to contrast two extremes in my past. The first one at school, there were two of us at the bottom of the top maths class, and the teacher used to treat us disgracefully, in my view. And it was 35 years ago, and I remember it like yesterday. He described us as barnacles on the ship of progress.
Oh, dear.
And despite the fact that we were two of the five top students in the school, we just didn't get maths.
But maybe they were just exasperated. I mean, I had a fabulous maths teacher, woman called Jan Kent, who I know is a Radio National listener.
Right.
And I wasn't particularly good at maths, but I think that was not her fault. It was mine.
Well, I think, yeah, there might be some contribution from us. But, to make the contrast, at uni we had this fantastic Professor Ball, and he brought pure maths alive for me. And so, whereas I never got applied mathematics, I thought, it is very much, being how it's said in context. And it's difficult to get maths in a vacuum. And for me, the context came much later with probability and statistics, which... I think it's probably as close as most, people get to, needing maths beyond simple arithmetic, to understand when politicians quote X percent of that or Y percent of that and compare the difference between the two. A bit of maths background will tell you how big the lies are.
Well, indeed. On Life Matters, we often have to look very closely at the way those statistics are used. And if you're not careful, the arguments can go very much the wrong way. But look, Simon has rung from Sydney, and you love maths, don't you?
I love maths.
Tell me why.
Yay.
Oh, I don't know. It just seems to make sense. I got into maths at school, and the thing about maths is always an answer. There's some problems, I guess, which are unsolvable or haven't been solved yet, but it all sort of makes sense. There's a right and a wrong answer, and when you get into delve into how to prove things are right and wrong, it was just nice.
Well, how do we get that passion across, Simon? And I guess, Mark, I'm curious for your responses to this as well. Do we need to rebrand maths? Do we need to culturally rethink the way that we understand it so that the pleasure that you all have in maths can be brought out to the rest of Australia?
Well, I think it's basically all about women. when I was at school, I had a crush on a very smart girl who was very good at maths. So I think, you know, Mark was saying earlier about his squash, with he had a crush on a girl who was good at squash. So I think women have a lot to blame.
Well, it's an interesting campaign. Caroline, how do you think we'd be able to apply that?
That one, that's tough. We'll just have to make sure that we choose the right maths teachers. I had an experience at my children's primary school. I was on the committee for helping write curriculum documents. So the document, the school policy that went with the curriculum document. And I was on the maths and science one for obvious reasons. And I went along, and they sort of had a statement of outcomes that they wanted students to have. And they said, you know, basic numeracy skills was the final outcome. And I said, hang on a minute. I said, can't we put something more positive in there? You know, in the literacy document, if I wrote basic literacy skills as an outcome for an entire primary school, they'd say, well, we want to engender a love of reading. And I said, can't we put something like that in the maths one as well? And they all looked at me blankly, like...
So the final
weird.
Aim was to appreciate the poetry of algebra.
That's right. And I actually, Marie and Mike, to some extent, both, for me, were really interesting to hear, because they had negative experiences initially and yet still came about and saw a love of mathematics later on and seeing the use of it. And that, I think that's just amazing, because often what happens is that kids in kindergarten, if they're fast with their arithmetic in year one and year two, they get told they're really good at maths, and so that positively reinforces things. But the kids that are slower, they think they're dumb, and so they don't tend to take more mathematics, even though that's not related to what we teach in primary school. You get kind of told you're smart if you're fast in early primary school, and yet that doesn't necessarily carry on. And so it's nice to see that there are people out there that actually do go on and find a love of mathematics, even though they weren't the kids that were labelled as really smart when it was the basic arithmetic skills. That's really nice to hear.
So, Mark Dress, how do we sex it up?
Well, so an interesting study that I was reading about by Louise White, she did a presentation at Curtin University several years ago. She was studying different attitudes in New Zealand between kids with families of Chinese backgrounds and kids with Anglo backgrounds and different all different sorts of backgrounds. And a big difference that she found was that the kids with a Chinese background said, it's my responsibility to find what's interesting in mathematics, whereas the Anglo kids were more, I expect to be not exactly entertained, but have it made sexy for me. I have no idea where the origin of that attitude comes from, but I think it's an important one. Well, that's not to say I don't think we should try to make it sexy. I know in my first year of teaching, I mean, I really love maths. I think it's a beautiful thing. When I was teaching, I was talking about all the stuff that I loved, but apparently I wasn't, according to my student feedback, isn't really enthusiastic. Yes, I am. It's just inside.
Bob Anderson, is there a way to harness the way in which different cultures approach maths, do you think, where it is seen as more positive, more integrated?
I think the different cultures just reflect the background of the parents, and I don't think that's... It's a nice idea to contemplate how one might exploit that in some way or other, if it could be a nice motivation for mathematics. But I think listening to, say, Caroline's point about the teaching of mathematics at primary, it's not only the children are praised if they're fast; they're also taught through arithmetic, which has to be learned as a stepping stone, that they must always be correct and that they must never make a mistake. And that is so far away from creativity and what's involved in real mathematics. And so I was very pleased to hear the comments of Murray, Mike and Simon, because what they're saying is that their mathematical awareness and awakening didn't happen until they moved on to algebra and to real mathematics, where they could see the challenge of finding different patterns and different relationships, and that's not there in arithmetic. But there's this assumption which we've got to somewhere or other politely and remove that if you're very good at arithmetic, you're going to be good at mathematics, and if you're not very good at arithmetic, you're going to be lousy at mathematics. I mean, it's just so wrong in terms of the history of mathematics.
Bob Anderson, thank you so much for that point, and thank you so much for your part in our discussion today. Bob is from the Mathematical and Information Services at CSIRO, and also with us today, Mark Drass, Computing Lecturer at Macquarie University. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you.
And Carolyn Kennett, Director of the Numeracy Centre at Macquarie University.
Thanks, Kate.
And if you called in but you couldn't get on, we'd love to hear from you. Call our listener line 02 833 1430 or write to us on our guestbook, abc.net.au/RN. I'm Kate Evans. This is Life Matters on Radio National. Do stay with us after the news.